This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. Today we're broadcasting live from the Fawcett Center on the campus of The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. We're here in Columbus for some of the same reasons that Frito-Lay comes here to try out their new chips. It's why Procter & Gamble uses Ohioans to test their Olay facial creams, and why the Razor Scooter Company recently chose Columbus to test drive its new motorized scooters. According to market researchers, Columbus is one of the few places where the local market mirrors the nation. On the eve of the inauguration, we want to revisit what some people said here was the biggest single issue in the presidential campaign, jobs and the economy. Like test marketers, we'll try to use this city and this state to reflect the country. So, 3 months after Election Day, how are you feeling about the economy, and what do you expect the President and Congress to do about it? For those of you listening around the country, the issues you hear about in Ohio may sound familiar. Old economy and new economy, unemployment, and a lack of skilled workers. Join the conversation and tell us what are the most pressing economic issues where you live. The number to call is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our first guest is someone who not only knows the economic picture here in Ohio, but can relate it to what's going on across the country. Mark Schweitzer is Assistant Vice President and Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, where he focuses on the regional economy. Mark, thanks for driving down to Columbus today to join us.
I'm happy to be here.
So what can the nation learn from the economy here in Ohio?
Well, I mean, Ohio in many ways does reflect the nation in our employment and where people work. And that has meant, with the exception of our larger manufacturing sector, what that's meant is our employment has changed dramatically. So we faced a manufacturing employment loss over this recession that continued on into the expansion. And overall, we've had a somewhat larger employment loss than the nation as a whole. But the patterns and how it's happening are very similar to the nation.
Now, you mentioned the transition from a manufacturing-based economy. Not so long ago, General Motors, steel manufacturers were the biggest employers. Now it's Walmart and the grocery chain Kroger.
Sure. And that's something that's happened throughout the nation. So if we're thinking back to 1970, about 30% of Ohio's employment was in manufacturing. Nationally, it was 20%. Ohio lost manufacturing jobs, and it seemed like we were diversifying, but of course the nation was diversifying at a similar rate. So now when you look around our economy, only about 15% of people are listed as working in manufacturing in Ohio, and about 11% nationally. So this pattern continues and happens both here and in the nation.
There is a perception that when jobs are lost at a steel mill and gained at a Walmart, people are making less money.
Well, if it was a steel mill in Walmart, that's almost certainly true. But the service sector is so much broader than Walmart. And I think one of the things that people lose touch with is just how broad the service sector is. When I look at full-time wages in the service sector, I actually find that the wage distribution, which means how many people do you see earning a particular wage at each and every point, is actually very similar between manufacturing and services. So it's not necessarily the case that a loss of jobs in a steel mill and it being replaced in the general service sector is necessarily bad.
So service sector includes things like healthcare, education.
It includes banking.
Banking. It
includes finance. It includes a lot of different jobs. And I'm always a bit amazed that people react that way about the service sector because, you know, as I pointed out earlier, the vast majority of us work in the service sector. So we know what we do. We know what our earnings are. Why do we think that necessarily service sector jobs are inferior? And it's that attachment to McDonald's and attachment to Walmart, I never quite understand why that sticks around.
Another part of the Ohio economy that, again, reflects other parts of the country as well is the importance of the agricultural sector. In agriculture, are we seeing mega farms or family businesses going out?
I mean, Ohio's agricultural sector is a bit smaller than other parts of the nation, and we tend to have a bit smaller farms than you would see out in the Great Plains states. So I don't know, we certainly see transitions, and we've seen transitions to more automated, more, you know, somewhat industrialized type farming as well in the state of Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Now, where does Columbus fit in this picture?
Well, Columbus really is in the middle, and Columbus is a bit different than, say, Cincinnati and Cleveland. Cleveland is where you're thinking steel mills, and that would be correct. And Cincinnati is really dominated by Procter Gamble, some of the machinery companies, and that's where its tradition came. But Columbus really is the state government. It's the Ohio State. It's finance. It's a little, you know, more service-focused than the vast majority of the state. And interestingly enough, Columbus is one of the areas where you see population growing and employment typically growing.
Well, let's talk now with Karen Holbrook. She is the president of the Ohio State University and joins us today. Here, we understand you changed some travel plans. We appreciate you taking the time to be here.
I think
today.
The weather has helped me change my travel plans. Thank you.
Well,
I'm glad to be here.
Let's not go there. What part does the presence of a great university play in the development of a city like Columbus?
Oh, I think it plays all kinds of roles. Right now, we're looking at Columbus and what are the sectors, what are the clusters of importance in Columbus. And when you look at the kinds of things that are going to develop the economy of Columbus, we look at logistics, we look at the service sector, we look at the finance sector, we look at tourism and hospitality, and a university plays in every one of those sectors. I could address that college by college as to how we promote the logistics and how we promote all of these different pieces. University plays a major role in virtually all of what goes on in Columbus, and not alone, but in partnership with some of our other organizations in the city, like Battelle Memorial Institute, and with some of the industry, with the public schools, and that's really our role.
Yet, as I understand it, Ohio State and Columbus continue to export young people.
We do. That's something that we're very concerned about. We'd like to be a state where we have the opportunity for our students to stay. We prepare and train about 59,000, almost 59,000 students as the largest university in the nation. Losing those people from Ohio is a terrific loss, but what we need are the kinds of jobs, and we need the kind of economy that keeps them here and makes them want to stay here.
Mark Schweitzer, at the same time these young, educated people are leaving, you hear businesses complain about lack of skilled labor.
You certainly do, and I've always had a bit of a split view on this idea that everybody's moving away. Of course, at the same time, we see people moving in. And this last particular episode, and when we've been looking at the issue of brain drain and the problems, and this has been a big issue up in Cleveland, has been a time where the Ohio economy has been performing worse than the nation. So it's not surprising that people are making choices and moving away. When you're actually looking at a time in the 1990s when the Ohio economy was faring about as well as the nation, we actually had a balanced flow in and out of the state. So it's not really at all odd to me as an economist to think, people are making decisions and going where their pay and options are better.
So what are the economic issues where you live? Our number, as always, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We're also taking calls, questions, rather, from members of the audience here at the Fawcett Center today. And let's begin with the lady to my right.
Yes, I'm Jenny Reitel, and I'm from Arlington, Ohio. Our biggest problem in Ohio by far are that our jobs are moving overseas, and there is simply no political agenda that I can see to stem this tide. And it's essentially devastating the middle class in Ohio. And I was going to point out to Mr. Schweitzer that a factory laborer gets $60,000, $70,000 a year. But when he gets laid off, he doesn't get a $60,000 or $70,000 a year in a bank.
Mm-hmm. Jenny, when you say jobs are being outsourced,
specifically, McDonald's.
Specifically, which jobs are you talking about? Has this happened to you? Anybody in your family?
Yes, my husband is an auto worker here in Columbus, one of the last 800 auto manufacturing jobs, probably, you know, within, you know, 200 miles of Columbus. And when he started there in 1976, there were 7,000 employees, and there's now 800. And they know for sure that their jobs went overseas. This was not any change in auto manufacturing. And when they get laid off, they don't get their factory laborer jobs. They go to McDonald's.
Is that where your husband's working now?
He is. He's still one of the last workers,
okay.
I think, on the planet.
Okay. Mark Schweitzer, did you want to respond?
Well, happily, I don't think he's actually one of the last auto workers on the planet. I mean, the changes in industry have really, you know, hurt the local economy, and it's a big issue here. There's no question that some jobs have moved overseas. But what you said there, to start out your question was, I don't see where the political agenda is. And it's often very difficult to say exactly how you want to define a policy that would actually alter that. I mean, it depends on exactly on what sort of industry it is and what sort of activities there are. One of the things that Ohio has benefited tremendously from is the Ohio Honda plant, which happens to just be a few miles west of here. So while other states have lost...
Would those be sort of jobs that were insourced?
I mean, that would be a description of insourcing if you wanted to count it as that type of flow. So the world economy, they're not union, but they actually get quite high pay.
They actually don't get as much by a long shot.
Thank you very much for the question, Jenny. Let's go now to a caller. And Mary. Mary's joining us from Toledo.
Hi. I think this is really interesting because I have two daughters who are college graduates who went to four-year universities in Ohio. And they, after struggling for a year to find a career in the Toledo area or Northwest Ohio, they are finally essentially giving up and leaving not only Northwest Ohio, but the state completely, after struggling for over a year to find a job in their fields. So it's not just manufacturing. You know, we struggle, everybody struggles to put their kids through college, and one kind of hopes that they are able to stay in the community and give back to the community. But the brain drain is alive and well in Toledo, and I see nothing on the horizon that is going to stave that at all. And it makes me really sad, and it makes me really frustrated that we are losing some of our best and brightest young people from Northwest Ohio to all parts of the country, including their peers, their colleagues who graduated with them within the last 2 years from university.
Mary, thanks very much for the call. We'll get to your subject when we come back from a short break. We're out of time in this segment, but we appreciate your calling in. If you'd like to join us, it's 800-989-8255. You can also email us, totn@npr.org. Back after the break, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. We're broadcasting live from the Fawcett Center on the campus of The Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. Our hosts are WOSU AM and the Columbus Metropolitan Club. Our topic is the economy. Our guests are Karen Holbrook, president of The Ohio State University, and Mark Schweitzer of the Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can email us, totn@npr.org. And let's get another question from the audience here in Columbus.
Thank you. I'm Ralph Nuskin from here in Columbus, and this is for Dr. Holbrook. What steps are being taken by The Ohio State University to partner with either the federal government or the Ohio State government to do research aimed at creating jobs in the state of Ohio?
Just by the question you've asked creates jobs. Partnership in research can be translated in terms of the dollars that are imported into the state for our research projects. Those can be translated into numbers of jobs by a factor. To be a little more specific, if one brings in a research grant, for example, in biomedical research, typically that brings with it several different jobs at various different levels of people who will work within that laboratory to promote jobs. It also helps jobs because the goods and services that are bought by the grant increase the kind of economy that surround that activity. All of the research enterprise creates a number of jobs in this state, and for Ohio State specifically, with a $528 million research budget, that creates a very large number of jobs directly related to the research enterprise. That's a partnership with the federal government. A partnership with the state is the same way, in that we have a number of funded projects through the Wright Centers of Innovation, through the Third Frontier Initiative, that also create jobs because of the partnerships, not just with the state, but with industry that is also involved in the same kinds of activities. And as more money is funneled in to do the research, it requires more people to help take part in it.
Ralph, before you leave us, do you work in the information sector? Are you part of this new economy, these partnerships?
No, I'm not.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a practicing lawyer.
that's part of the old economy, I think.
That's true.
Some parts of Ohio are transitioning more easily than others. Tom Sawyer joins us now. He served 16 years in the United States Congress, a Democrat representing the Akron, Ohio area. Before that, he was a state legislator and mayor of Akron, Ohio, and it's good of you to drive down and be with us here on Talk of the Nation.
Well, the weather was a challenge, but we're here now.
Okay. We first met years ago when the last rubber plant, the tire plant in the city of Akron, was closing. People remember Akron, Ohio, of course, as Rubber City, USA. It has been making a difficult transition ever since.
It has been, but it's been one of those cities that has made a decision that we were not simply going to try to recapture what we once were in terms of our signature industry, but to take the skill set that we had developed from that industry and go on to become the best that we can become in our future. That's no easy thing to do, but it's important to recognize that we as a community, we as a state, and as a nation have been here before. In the last 15 years of the 19th century, this nation went through a jarring transition from a largely agrarian economy into the second industrial revolution, nowhere more than in places like Ohio. When President Holbrooke talks about the role of higher education, I would submit to you that a decision that was made on the federal level in the last half of the 19th century to by a man named Justin Morrill, who never got beyond the sixth grade, to build a new kind of university in this country aimed at the skills of manufacturing and business and agriculture, and it revolutionized the United States. It created the 20th century. Ohio State University was one of those schools, and the land-grant colleges changed everything. It changed the skill set that we expected from our elementary and secondary schools. And it was a time when, up until then, virtually half of us never got beyond the sixth grade. Half of us lived and worked on farms because it took that many to feed and clothe all of us. And places like some of the cities that you've heard, you've been talking about, the Clevelands, the Akrons, the Youngstowns, the Toledos, became the center of the automotive industry and the skill set that it took to change that. Didn't happen overnight. It happened through a lot of very serious effort through education, and it was a commanding force within our economy. There was a second commanding force that was going on at that time, and that was that it was the first time that a million people came into this country year in and year out, both through San Francisco and Ellis Island. And that phenomenon lasted for the better part of two decades. Demographic change and technological change changed everything. And if that sounds familiar to you, it ought to, because those same two forces are taking place in the United States right now. And I think it's not so much that universities aren't doing what they need to do, or even for that matter, elementary and secondary schools. It is that the skill expectations that we have for those kinds of institutions is changing as we sit here. One of the things that we really need to do is to recognize the kind of teamwork that it takes place, not just in state and local government, although that's where the responsibility largely lies, but as a matter of national decision-making as well. It happened 100 years ago. It needs to happen again.
One of the things that happened in Akron in the transition was a vote came up in Congress on NAFTA, which turned out to be a pivotal vote in a lot of ways. You were representing Akron, an area heavily unionized at one time, a lot of heavy manufacturing. You ended up voting for NAFTA. Why?
It was the hardest decision I had to make in 30 years of public policy making. I found myself in a community that was split right down the middle. Akron has been a place where the industry that defined it has been transnational in its organization and global in its reach for its entire history, because its natural resources came from all over the world. About half of the community recognized that it was important for Akron to be a participant in a global economy, and the other half of that electorate was scared to death that they would not be included in that participation. The kind of growth that has taken place in the Akron economy during the 1990s represents a growth in the actual exportation of goods and services from the city of Akron, Ohio. But that doesn't make that kind of transition any easier. It is an extremely difficult thing to do. There's a company nearby that split off, that's principal split off from Goodyear 3 or 4 decades ago in order to use the skills that they had in synthetic materials to make cabin liners for commercial aircraft. Today, Schneller is the world's largest manufacturer of cabin liners and provides, at least up until about a year and a half ago, 100% of the cabin liners that Airbus Industry, that today is rolling out the largest airliner ever, and it is a national presence. Those kinds of companies that most people have never heard of are the kinds of companies that are growing in places like Akron, Ohio, largely because we've stopped the business of saying, we're just going to close our eyes, clench our fists, and those jobs that we that used to define us will come back. Instead, we have gotten on with the business of trying to decide what kind of community it is that we're going to be in the future. That transition is still going on, but it has been more successful than in the places that have simply closed their mind to the future and tried to recapture their past.
Let's get another question from the audience.
Thank you, Neil. My name is Ted Celeste. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and a former member of the Board of Trustees here at Ohio State University. And I have a question for Congressman Sawyer. If you were to write a strategic plan for job creation in Ohio, what would be the three key ingredients to get us moving forward?
And I'd give you 30 seconds.
Elementary, secondary, and higher. It's really at the heart of what economic growth has got to be about. We grow because we have the skills that we need to grow. And that doesn't happen by accident. It happens because people in the governor's office and in the state legislature and in local communities, as well as people in Washington, understand that that is at the heart of what has always made us strong.
And President Holbrooke, let me ask you, one of the issues that comes up when you talk about, three levels of education, the cost of education in this state is not insubstantial. The Ohio State University is a serious commitment for most parents to pay for their children to come here.
That's true. Affordability is one of the key issues in higher education today that's looked at nationally. It's very important. Access, affordability, and accountability. All three of those things are on everybody's mind about higher education today. You asked specifically about Ohio State, and what I can say is that as our tuition was raised the last 2 years, enough of that was put away that we had $20 million to help support higher education to those who are qualified to come into the state. Mm-hmm. There are many venues for education in the state that have different levels of cost to them, so there is opportunity for everybody, whether they start out at Ohio State in Columbus, whether they start out on one of our regional campuses, which is at a little bit lower cost, whether they start out at one of our excellent community colleges across the state. Education is affordable. Funds are available both at the university level, the state level, and the federal level so that students can access higher education.
How much does it cost to go to school here for a year?
It's about, the tuition's a little over $7,000.
David Rosenbaum, a reporter for the New York Times, wrote in an article on Sunday, Republicans mostly believe that the role of government is to foster greater individual economic achievement, even if it leads to more economic inequality. The Democratic philosophy is that government should provide a safety net, even if it leads to economic inefficiency. Congressman Sawyer, I wonder what you think about that.
I think it's a profound oversimplification of what the way our nation works and the way our government works. I don't know whether Mike Oxley is on the line or not.
He's on the line, and you've anticipated where we're going next.
Well, just let me say that one of the things that we talked about in the last hour was the kind of disagreement that is taking place in political decision-making all across the country. Mike and I have worked together for 30 years. We served together in the legislature. He went off to Congress. I went off to Akron. And then we met up in Congress again in the middle of the 1980s. There are a lot of things we don't agree about. But one thing is that we do agree about is that we will always be able to work together. I think it's the kind of thing that is fostered when you've got a coherent political environment in which people can learn to cooperate.
Mike Oxley, you could hardly ask for a better introduction. Mike Oxley.
It's good to hear from my old friend Tom Sawyer. I served so many years in the legislature and in Congress. And Tom, hello. And I've always admired Tom Sawyer, that you asked him about NAFTA, and It was a courageous vote. It was the right vote. He was looking forward, not backward, and he has been an enormous example of what principled leadership is all about. And President Holbrooke, it's nice to talk with you again.
Thank you.
And go Buckeyes. We're proud of what we were able to accomplish. We went down to the Alamo Bowl and had a great time down there. I think that in the financial services area, which is one of the big growing areas in the area that I chair here in Washington, we've seen areas like Columbus particularly grow as part of their base has been the financial services sector. And they are almost by definition international in scope and provide the necessary capital and loans to make business go and create jobs and economic progress. And that's been the goal ever since I became chairman in 2001 to make that happen and to allow those institutions as much as they can to grow and to provide the kind of necessary capital for our system to operate efficiently.
For those who are not from Ohio, Mike Oxley is a Republican congressman, represents the 4th District from just north of here. He's also, as he mentioned, on the House Financial Services Committee, and he's with us by phone today from Washington, D.C. We were hoping he could be here, but I gather you've got some other obligations there in Washington tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. It just happened that way, and we've got a lot of folks here from Ohio for the inauguration, and fortunately it stopped snowing here, so things are looking up.
Well, some of us are trying to get back to Washington tonight, so maybe we can still get in. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, broadcasting today from Columbus, and this is NPR News. And let's get another question, this from the audience here in Columbus.
Hi, my name is Lauren Pincus. I'm an Ohio State graduate student. And I actually have a question about the rising cost of tuition. You just mentioned it's gone up twice over the past 2 years. And I've noticed that housing costs have also gone up in Ohio, along with this loss of jobs. And I was wondering, since salaries do not seem to be matching these rising costs, what proposals are out there to help us try and match housing and basic needs that we need?
President Holbrooke?
I think let me address the tuition issue. One of the problems in Ohio has been, over the last 4 years, the consistent cuts in state support for higher education. There was a time when the state paid more for students' education than families. They were something like this as they were balanced. But about a few years ago...
Holding your hands apart doesn't really work on the radio.
It doesn't work on the radio, does it? All right, let me say that if you were to draw a histogram, the state paid significantly more than the families and the students did for their tuition. But a few years ago, there was a crossover whereby the cost of education is more borne by the students and by the families than it is by the state. The state's investment in higher education is an investment in future, it's an investment in jobs, and it's an investment in this state's economy. But we have gotten to the point where that investment has gotten so low that tuition has had to rise. We recognize that this is a problem. This is a problem in Ohio. This is a problem all across the nation. It is a very serious concern of ours that we are putting more funding on the backs of students. We are looking at it very carefully for this year. We're balancing that with what is a quality education and just how accountable can we be within our own institution. And I can tell you, having just put together the performance efficiency measure for the Board of Regents, the Ohio State University has cut $45 million in salaries from general education, $25 million in goods and services, has collaborated with other universities so that we do things collectively, has transferred many credits of students. So we're working as hard as we can to keep costs down, to keep quality up. And we do recognize that this is an issue for the future. Housing is part of the marketplace that we are also part of when we offer residence hall tuition or residence halls to our students, and it too is something that we're working very hard on. I can't tell you what goes on in the private sector and how we're doing it. I can tell you that your concern is one that is not being overlooked at all in the university, and it's one that we all have to cooperate on to try to make an affordable education for our students, not just the university and cutting back and continually getting more efficient, which we believe in, but it's got to be an investment also from the state in their state institution and in their state students.
That is Karen Holbrook, the president of The Ohio State University. Also with us, former Congressman Tom Sawyer, current Congressman Michael Oxley, and Mark Schweitzer of the Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland. We're going to take a short break, come back with more of your calls and emails. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about pocketbook issues that many Americans are dealing with, so are many Ohioans. President Bush may or may not have to deal with. Our guests are Mike Schweitzer of the Federal Reserve Bank in Cleveland, Karen Holbrook, who's the president of The Ohio State University, former Congressman Tom Sawyer, and Congressman Mike Oxley, who represents the 4th District of Ohio. Here's an email question from Bill Novak. Having grown up in a small farming community with an industrial base, Iron Works, then Dresser, now Komatsu, that was devastated by the loss of these medium-sized companies, what is Ohio as a whole doing to revitalize its smaller communities? Congressman Sawyer, this is something that you dealt with.
Well, actually, it isn't. I had relatively few smaller communities in my district, and when I was a mayor, I was representing one of the larger communities. But I do have some thoughts on it, and it is this, that communities have to grow and change as the economies around them grow and change. It is critical that happens. The best place to do that, I think, is through local government, but the states and the federal government can be of assistance, but the vision has to come from localities. It comes from taking the skills that are a part of a smaller industry and helping them transition to new kinds of work that can make all the difference. It's what has happened in large numbers of smaller industries in Akron, Ohio, who are becoming today what they can become. GE in Cincinnati, a large industry in a large city, began as a home appliance company and today manufactures jet engines. They began their transition a long time ago. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Mark Schweitzer, Congressman Sawyer was talking earlier about, are these jobs coming back, these manufacturing jobs, ever?
We wouldn't want to say no. We don't have a crystal ball that says no, there aren't going to be some of these manufacturing jobs. And in the 1990s, we did see a gradual recovery of employment and manufacturing in the U.S. and in Ohio. When we're thinking about that gradual growth, that is what we would have to anticipate as a best-case scenario. So this is a state where we need to be pursuing how are we going to transition to new activities and new functions. And even when you're seeing growth in manufacturing, it's probably going to be growth in new manufacturing businesses rather than necessarily the return of jobs in old ones. And this can be a big and important issue in small communities.
Let's get another caller on the line. And this is Mike, and Mike is calling from Akron, Ohio.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I have two quick points here that I want to make. I'm self-employed, and I know a lot of people who are not self-employed are either losing their health care benefits or they're drastically reduced now. So they are essentially more like self-employed people now. And the point I want to make is that as long as people are paying what is essentially a second mortgage for health insurance, the overall effect on the economy can only be negative. Health insurance to me was one of the biggest concerns in the last election.
Well,
I think next to the cost of energy, I think that is really going to bring down not only Ohio's economy, but the U.S. economy.
Let's turn to Congressman Oxley for that.
Well, I think the gentleman makes a good point, and we're trying to address a lot of those issues. One of the things the president keeps emphasizing is the cost of malpractice insurance and how it's related to the cost of health care. That is the tort system and, in many cases, the abuse of the tort system that tends to drive the cost of health care up, and I'm hopeful that early in this session we'll be able to address that up front. I think we can wring enormous cost benefits by changing the tort system. He also mentioned energy. I expect that we'll pass an energy bill. Last session we actually passed it in both houses by rather large margins, went to conference. The House had actually approved the conference report, and it got stuck in the Senate. I think that the president will lead the Congress into a new energy bill, which will, I think, have the benefit of increasing productivity and production in the energy sector, opening our eyes, I think, to some alternatives that we've ignored for a number of years to get less reliance on foreign sources of energy and more ability to create energy sources here in this country. We've already got a couple of projects going on in my district in Lima, in which a clean coal technology will be able to produce coal gasification, environmentally sound, and will have an enormous impact, I think, in the overall marketplace. Another project in Lima will be able to take some of the heavy crude that we get, we can get from Canada, and be able to find a new process in which we can refine that product. And the company plans to put about $1 billion into that project, which will be the largest amount of capital put into any project, I think, in the history of the state of Ohio. So there are a lot of positive things going on in the healthcare field as well as in the energy field that I think will inure to the economic benefit of all of us.
But I wanted to...
Can I make one more point?
Go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that an Ohio-specific problem, I think, is the uncertainty over a state funding solution for the public schools. We're seeing local communities voting down school levies, thinking that the state will someday get its act together and put forth a viable funding plan, and close to a decade later, after a major court decision, they have not done so, and I think employers have taken note to this fact.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's get another call, question, or rather hear from the audience in at the Fawcett Center. You, sir.
Hi, I'm Colin Peters, and I'm a high school student raised on a farm about 25 minutes south of here. I'm lucky enough to go to college next year, but as manufacturing jobs leave Ohio, options for students coming out of high school into the workforce are few. What will happen to students I know who are coming out of high school next year?
Who wants to tackle that question? President Holbrooke, why don't you give it a shot?
Well, obviously, we believe that post-secondary education is important coming out of high school, and our hope is that every student, whether it's a college or a university or a community college or a technical school or some kind of an adult training school, some students will have an opportunity and will want to go in to prepare themselves with greater flexibility than simply going straight away into a career. Right now, the data show that 85% of the jobs that bring in high wages or even good wages, require some kind of post-secondary education. We are really fortunate in the state of Ohio that we have many options and many opportunities for students. And part of what we want to do is get the message out to high school students, but even get it out earlier to middle school students, to grade school students. And it's even been said nationally that preschool students need to begin thinking about post-secondary education very early on. Now, it's pretty hard to tell a preschool kid that they're going to need to go to something, but you can prepare them for a life of learning, and that's the important thing. So my advice to a high school student is start looking around and thinking about what is your passion, what are you excited about, what can you prepare yourself for, and prepare yourself in such a way that you are prepared to learn throughout a lifetime, so that if one job goes away, you have an opportunity to move into another or move into a different kind of program that will give you a new set of skills. So I guess my message to high school students is don't stop. Think about where you go next.
Mark, let me ask you. I think nationally it's something like 26% of the country has college degrees. If you don't go to college, what is there for you?
Well, I mean, your options are more limited now. I mean, one of the things that we spend a lot of time talking to businesses, and whether I talk to a business in the service sector or I talk to a manufacturer, they stress that they want an entering employee's higher education levels. So throughout the nation, there's a gradual movement towards higher education levels. Not all jobs take higher education levels, but the reality is that increasingly that ought to be the focus of each and every student to get that little bit further along in their education.
Congressman Sawyer.
I would add to that, if you're not prepared to go for a four-year degree, look for the kind of two-year training that will give you a useful credential that you can take to an employer and use that to support yourself as you consider getting further education. And I would urge the educational institutions in the state to look for ways to find useful credentialing programs. that can be sold directly to students as a device that they can use in the workplace and sold to employers as a reliable source of effective training post-secondary.
Congressman Oxley, we just have a few seconds left, but I did want to bring you into this part of the discussion. Education seems to be one of the things that we keep coming back to again and again in this conversation. Pell Grants are going to be one of the big issues that you're going to be facing in this next term of Congress, and also an extension of No Child Left Behind.
That's correct, and Chairman Boehner, my colleague from the Cincinnati area, of course, is chair of the Education and Workforce Committee, and was the co-author with Senator Kennedy of No Child Left Behind. And I know he's going to have an extensive series of hearings on that particular provision. I did want to comment about what we talked about before. You know, it seems to me that that young gentleman talked about what would the future be. You know, we have a great state tradition of innovation. After all, we're the state of the Wright brothers and Thomas Alva Edison. And the innovation that's going on throughout the state is quite extensive. We've got ethanol facilities that are going to be built in our district, and I think you'll see that trend continue. The energy sector that I mentioned before, the financial services sector, a lot of very positive developments are going to be providing those kind of jobs. And you know, I represent three of the four branch campuses at Ohio State, in Mansfield and Lima and Marion, and we keep close tabs on what they're doing and other institutions. And part of it is matching, though, the need with the kind of program. For example, there's been a huge shortage of nurses, not just in Ohio, but all throughout the country. And we're working on trying to make certain that the programs that are offered at these various institutions attract these kind of students that may want to get into nursing to fill that need. So part of it seems to me, is trying to match the need with the kind of students that are interested in that particular field. And I think we're starting to see some success on that end.
Congressman Oxley,
but to that end, we're going to have to continue to provide the kind of means necessary for students and Pell Grants and other forms of federal and state programs to make certain that they have the wherewithal to get their degree.
Congressman Oxley, I'll give you the Wright brothers, but Tom Edison moved to New Jersey for opportunity. That's where I'm from.
Well, the Wright brothers, you know, Wright brothers tested their plane in North Carolina, but we determined the only thing that North Carolina provided was the wind.
Well, we'll revisit that perhaps when we go to Raleigh-Durham. Congressman Oxley, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Mike Oxley joined us from his office in Washington, D.C. I'd like to thank the other members of the panel here with me at the at Ohio State. Mark Schweitzer, Assistant Vice President and Economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland, and former Congressman Tom Sawyer, and Karen Holbrook, the President of the Ohio State University. And we'll continue talking about another Ohio obsession in a minute, sports. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.